But our guests today are Jill Thompson and Sharon Cantrell. And when I think of who is doing really great work in the world and great work in our community, Sharon and Jill come to mind right away. And I want to make sure that you know them because they have been doing some great work, not only in our community, but in our church in particular here at South Main. And I want you to know who they are and have access to some of the resources that they are bringing to us. So let's kind of start. As you may remember, last year we had a program called Faith Care Connection, and we introduced you, I think, to what Faith Care Connection does. But again, I wanted to make sure you know Sharon and Jill in particular. And so let me just kind of ask you, Jill, maybe to start, just introduce yourself and maybe a little bit of background, where you're from, maybe education, what you do with Amazing Place, and your connection to a church in the area as well.
Is this turned on?
Nope. No. There we go. You're on.
All right, I'm on. Good. All right, so hi, I'm Jill Thompson, and it's so good to be here with you all. My coworkers, Catherine Christie and Linda Shoney, came to visit with you last fall, and I wasn't able to come because I was moving my son, who was a freshman in college, into his dorm room, so I missed you all then. I've been in Amazing Place now almost 2 years as part of the Faith Care Connection program, so I'm a care consultant, but for 20 years prior to being a care consultant, I have been a licensed physical therapist working primarily with the elderly population, specifically with people who've had neurological injuries or strokes, head injuries of that nature. So that this is a good segue into care consultation for seniors in the community. I am originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, and received a bachelor's in science degree in biology from Hendricks College, which is a small liberal arts college. Then received my physical therapy degree from the University of Central Arkansas.
Right, and tell us a little bit about what church you're connected to that's mm-hmm. kind of special I want them to know about, too.
So I am connected to Christ Church Cathedral, which is the Episcopal Cathedral downtown. My husband happens to be the dean of the cathedral, and so we are blessed to be here in Houston. We've been here for about 7 years now.
Yeah, and Barkley, her husband's good friend, is Steve. They connect on a almost weekly basis,
yep.
I think,
yep.
and kind of compare notes, you guys and the congregation over there,
yep.
I think. Sharon, tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
Well, I'm Sharon Cantrell, and I've worked at Amazing Place 2.5 years now, and I am the caregiver educator there and a manager of Savvy.
And tell us a little bit about what Savvy Caregiver is.
Savvy is a dementia-specific caregiver program, and it is 6 weeks, 2 hours a week. It's very extensive and comprehensive evidence-based program that's been very successful in the community. Greg, your church was one of the first to – I was like a door-to-door salesman on my own – there was no Savvy here in Houston, and my objectives in the grant was to learn it, become a master trainer, earn that certification, and then start to develop it in our governing churches. Those were the objectives of the grant. So Greg was, and this church was one of the first to give me a chance, and I didn't really know exactly what I was doing, but 37 classes later, he's been supportive the whole way through. I got an undergraduate degree in speech pathology and audiology at the University of Texas. I got my master's at University of Houston, and then I did a year's internship through Baylor just in neurogenic disorders. So I had worked in the hospitals and worked with this population before, and then on the personal side, I took care of my mother for 6 years who had vascular dementia. So I understand the emotional side of what families go through when it's happening to someone you love.
Great.
What else about me?
Nothing. Yeah. No, that's great. We're going to get a little bit more into what Savvy Caregiver
yes.
provides and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And as you probably know, one of our ministry partners, Amazing Place, is a day facility, day care for folks with mild to moderate dementia. And this these new efforts are a part of what Amazing Place does. I see Lydia over there, a board member, and just a terrific place and terrific organization. And this is sort of an add. It was initially sort of an add-on of what they were doing, Faith Care Connection and Savvy Caregiver, but it's really kind of become something that's core to what the organization does. And that's why I asked them here is to tell us a little bit about these organizations and the things that they do. Why focus on churches, Jill? Why is what you're doing, connecting with people in churches? Why are churches sort of a good sort of low hanging fruit unit to try to find your way in to give care to folks?
Right. So churches are a great way to find care for folks because hopefully most of the time the churches know their congregants, or at least the congregants know each other. So if there are issues that one is struggling with or a caregiver is struggling with, hopefully someone within that church knows and will communicate that so that the church can be a support for that person or for their family. And so a grant that Amazing Place received a few years ago was all about how can we connect with the churches to try to find individuals who are suffering from dementia, who are maybe isolating themselves. We hope that if someone has started to socially isolate themselves, they've been a congregant, they've come to church, they've come to these kinds of activities, and maybe someone hasn't seen them in a while. And that might just sort of be a sign. We need to check on this person and see what's happening. The church is sort of an already made support system and family. And so it's a good way to connect with individuals and their families.
And so Jill does. She's met with me and was Lonnie and now Phyllis. To find out some people in our congregation that might need some resources. And then we kind of sometimes go to their main ties person and make a connection with them and maybe their caregivers, or maybe if they don't have any caregivers, begin to introduce the resources that Jill has into their lives. So Jill actually goes to folks' homes, talks to them, and we'll get in a little bit more about that. What Sharon does is lead these classes called Savvy Caregiver. So if you've got someone that you're caring for with dementia or just simply want to know more about caregiver or more about how to communicate with someone with dementia, Sharon holds these classes that many South Mainers have in fact gone through to learn a bit about them. Sharon, kind of talk to us about Savvy. You mentioned how long the training is, about 6 weeks.
It's 6 weeks, 2 hours each week. You get a caregiver manual. The courses are free, and it's very comprehensive. It starts out with the neuroscience information about actually what is happening in the dementia brain. It's not just a memory problem. People see their loved one having lots of changes, and behavior changes, and personality changes. And it's extremely helpful to know why those things are happening. It's part of the disease. And that's the foundation for being able to strategize how to help them, how to facilitate a quality life at home, how to interpret their behaviors that are changing and be patient and realize it's not personal, it's the disease, and the love is still there. Also, it's a very... usually these caregivers come to and make the commitment to these programs, and it is for the caregivers. I'm not worried about their person. They are loved and safe, and here's someone that's trying to take care of them, making this commitment to learn and gain skills and tools. So this is about the caregivers, really supporting them, understanding the overwhelming stress that they're under to do all of these jobs under an inherited role that they weren't trained for. They inherited it because of a loving relationship and sometimes a distant relationship. Someone will step up because there's no one there. So There's self-care structure built in so that they are supported and know how to take care of themselves, and we assimilate ways for them to get help. And they watch a DVD in the third session that actually shows the stages of dementia, people trying to do things in different stages of dementia in the declining trajectory of it. So we can be realistic and make decisions and put plans into place ahead of time. We end in the last session, there's decision-making models and dynamics of family caregiving, and also just applying what they're learning to their individual problems in their situation, actually affecting a change. And we give them lots and lots of resources, and when it's outside of the scope of what we address in the program, we get them the help they need. We work closely. We refer a lot to FCC because they are the ones, they're like actual geriatric managers. I don't know if you all know how expensive those people are, but FCC pretty much does a lot of that in really connecting, walking people through help with extra resources. If they need to look for a facility or anything they need, FCC can help.
Let me ask you this. In one of the things, and I've kind of ducked into some of the classes some and seen South Mainers take the classes and seen they're doing checklists and they're doing watching videos and things of that sort. One of the things that I gained a great appreciation of, even though I've been through the experience, is to realize that it's not just a memory issue, that you begin to empathize more with what the person is going through from a spatial standpoint, from an anxiety standpoint.
Yes.
Talk maybe a little bit about the tips that you give to folks about how to talk and communicate with their loved one that's suffering from dementia.
Yes, and I brought a handout, so if y'all would pick one up to look at it. It's some bullet points, and it kind of sums up. There's also some bookmarks. Kind of sums up a lot of strategies. But as Greg mentioned, in the beginning, when we learn that it's not just memory, there's a lot of cognitive processes that are disconnecting, and it's random. I mean, some days they might be able to do something, and the next day they can't remember that. So it's not constant, but they're disconnecting, and there's so many areas, perception and attention and organization, so many things that we learn that basic information. And it helps to really understand why you're seeing the behaviors and changes that you are. Here's an example of some strategies that we work on and start applying in their daily life to remember. The dementia diseases, they cause a general and increasing confusion about time, short-term memories, financial management, judgment, and making choices. It is thoughtful and caring to eliminate any instructions regarding time. It is thoughtful and caring to limit their involvement in decisions. That's very stressful for them. We feel like we're trying to honor them and giving them a lot of choices. That makes things very hard for them. It is thoughtful and caring to communicate in a new way, stating things directly with fewer words. It is thoughtful and caring to assume they will not be able to have good judgment about their safety. Their judgment, that's a high-level executive functioning, and even when they seem normal, that's usually affected first. And then there's pointers to, okay, don't ever say, don't you remember? I told you we were going to the appointment. That doesn't help. A sensitive way of orientation, is not like, do you know what day it is today? Practice. We come from a standpoint of caring for children who have underdeveloped brains. And yes, it's good to model and correct and encourage to get it right. But someone with dementia, it's all there. It's all there. It's just disconnecting. And to require them to say the right thing, come up with the right answer. Come on now, you can tell me what day it is. I know you know that. That really throws them into a lot of confusion and anxiety. So we work a lot, and you can pick up this handout on, so if you know people, it will help you interact with someone with dementia. One of the main things to remember is just to limit their stress. Their brain is already very stressed.
Yeah. And folks can experience joy, though, also. On the other hand,
yes,
you can,
yes,
that sort of thing. If
we help them structure daily life so that things are easier for them, facilitate joy. There's a lot of quality of life left for people with dementia, but their daily life has to be very much simplified and organized. And yes, there's a lot of joy, but we help people in the classes, in the programs, to find how to do that.
For instance, like if you're with someone, you might want to say, would you like chicken or meat? Not what would you like, right?
Right.
Things of that sort. Okay.
Right. Don't give them choices. So you want me to give concrete examples. Well, for instance, a good one is a lot of people like to go out to eat. You know, it gets harder to cook. It's harder to cook for just two. And, you know, so they're in the habit of going out for dinner. And someone with dementia, that can become kind of hard and confusing. So we strategize about things that really work. Go to a restaurant that, you know, very familiar with. Go at a time when it's quieter. Don't get menus. Get your order ahead of time, and it's just delivered to the table. Simplify so that there's not so many distractions. That's not minimizing your loved one. That's just setting up the situation so that they can enjoy themselves, and it's not so distracting and confusing.
How many of you are dealing with somebody that has dementia, a loved one? And how many of you have done that in the past? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So very common. I think almost any room that we would have anywhere in the United States or the world, really, if we'd have similar numbers and something that we're having to deal with. Jill, I want to ask you a little bit about Faith Care Connection, what you do. Jill and I and Tracy Brown, the executive director of Amazing Place, and is Sharon coming to, and are going to the conference on aging in Atlanta in March and doing a presentation. And Jill is kind of taking the laboring oar on that, and I want her to talk a little bit about what she's going to talk about there, but also just give us an idea of what the process has been with Faith Care Connection in particular, with an eye on you know, folks that may know somebody that could benefit from this, or eventually probably we could all benefit from something like this. But talk a little bit about Faith Care Connection.
So when we go to the conference in Atlanta, my part of the conference is really about the nuts and bolts of what Faith Care Connection does and how we interact with families and individuals in churches. The process is such that we, as Faith Care Connection coordinators, really want to be a partner with your church. We want to partner with the pastoral care team. We want to be your partner to help with the individuals who may have dementia, may be caring for someone with dementia, or may even just being that risk factor area. Because 1 in 10 individuals over the age of 65 have some sort of dementia. And as you age, to get to age 85, that jumps to 1 in 3. So people are out there. So the process is such that after having an informational meeting with the church, the church may decide a couple ways to sort of identify people, may decide to kind of go through their list of people that are above that age 65 and then sort of look through that list and see if there's anyone that someone has expressed concerns about, anyone that maybe they realize, you know what, we haven't seen Mrs. So-and-so in quite a while. Wonder what's going on. And we may make some connections and calls that way. And then a lot of times it's the pastor is very, you know, there is a concern. They know there's a concern. They know there's something going on. And so they help make that connection with the coordinator and the individual. And once we go make that connection with the individual, we like to go see them in their home because you can learn so much about someone in their home. And so hopefully we can get there. And when we get in the home, we just have a conversation, really trying to find out kind of what is their cognitive level at that moment, as best we can. We're just doing screens. Are they showing any signs of depression? How do they feel about their quality of life right now? And are they socially isolating themselves? Okay, so we kind of try to get a feel for all that in a conversational style. And then if someone is living alone, we really want to find out who their person is. Is there someone in their community, their neighbor, their friend that they count on? Do they have family, but they don't live in town? They live out of state? And try to get that information and connect with whoever their person is as well. And so then after we have had those initial visits and sort of get the lay of the land and what's going on, as a Faith Care Connection coordinator, we have some resources to provide for them, knowing where they can go in the community to get what they need and develop that relationship so that as things change with the individual, they have that comfort level to know who to ask for, what's next, what do I need to do next, where do I need to go next. And so that's the whole goal of the Faith Care Connection, is to try to be there to prevent negative consequences from occurring and to develop those relationships so that along the way we are there and can help be a supplement to the pastoral care that the church is giving.
Yeah, and that's what I see a lot. It's just so helpful to have, a registered nurse, a social worker, a physical therapist available to reach out to our congregations. What do you typically see as challenges of the person when you're there and you're doing these screens and you're talking to them, you're looking around the home or their apartment? Maybe give us a couple of case studies of what you've seen, what you've been through.
So I'll talk about one case in particular that a church was concerned about an individual. She lived alone.
And by the way, you work with several different churches.
Several churches.
Too.
So we actually work with 15 different churches. So this particular case is not a South Main Baptist person. I should say that. Church was concerned about her. She lived alone. No children. So really, her church was her family. Her church is where she spent most of her time. Her neighbors knew that. Her neighbors started going to the church saying, look, we know that Miss So-and-so, I'll call her Sue. Sue's electricity's been turned off because she's forgotten to pay the bill. She's locking herself out of her home. You know, there were just things that were the church was being made aware of. So our Faith Care Connection coordinator was connected with her, went to visit her, and she was pretty cognitively impaired. That was pretty obvious at the first. She had some hoarding going on in the house. She had a cat, so she would have plates of cat food everywhere. She was having some paranoia and delusions that were apparent, things of that nature. Through the conversation, our coordinator found out that she did have three nephews who lived in town. And so our coordinator was able to connect with one of those nephews. And so while they recognized their aunt was having some memory problems, they really weren't aware as to how much it had progressed and kind of what was going on. And so this was sort of a wake-up moment for them. Hey, you are her family. You are her person. And so that was a wake-up moment. Coordinators were able to facilitate some communication then between the nephews and the church, which was helpful. At that point in time, the nephews realized pretty quickly that they needed to work towards guardianship. And so that was something the coordinator was able to give them some guidance into starting with to getting guardianship with her. And also able to provide the nephews with, here are some assisted living memory care facilities that in the meantime you can kind of start checking out and seeing what you think is best and what works, and guiding them through that process. There were a lot of other issues with this woman that Faith Care helped with. There were, you know, some immediate acute psych issues that arose out of the situation. But the long and the short of it is it took a full year, but eventually they did get guardianship and moved her into a memory care facility where she is thriving, she is happy, she is doing well, and most of all, she is safe.
Yeah. And there's financial part of it, there's mm-hmm. legal, there's, as you say, medical,
there's
psychological, spiritual,
there are a lot of relational yeah. needs to address. Another case study is similar in some ways. This is a woman who was not quite as, she has some dementia, not as involved, living alone, two children out of the state, one still in the city, but 45 minutes away. You know, Houston is huge, so it wasn't easy for him to get to her to check on her. And her church was very concerned, and she had actually been scammed out of $125,000, which really depleted her financially. And so a lot of work, the church was very involved with that, her church was, in helping with meals. She ended up not driving anymore, helping with transportation. And again, a lot of communication needed to occur between the church and the family. And once that communication started, things moved along fairly quickly with her, and she was able to then get moved to she moved into the same apartment complex as her son. So now he is checking on her daily. They're eating dinner together once or twice a week. He is closer to her to get her to her appointments. So all in all, it's a better situation for all of them.
It seems like every single one is very case by case.
Very case by case. Depending on, you know, family involvement, yeah. if there is a lot of family involvement or not. And each church is different in what they're able to help with. You know, some churches are able to provide a lot of meals or transportation, and then some churches just aren't set up for that or just don't have the volunteer base for that. And so it's a challenge church by church also.
Well, and talk to us about that. What can we as a church do to help people that are at risk, again, whether it's dementia or just living alone and just general risk and security and that sort of thing? What can a church do? What kind of advice would you give us for our Sunday school classes, for our colleagues that we sit in the pews with? What should we be looking for, and what can we really do to help either one of you?
So I think, and Sharon can answer this too, I think just really noticing if you're a member of a Sunday school class that's, you know, pretty consistent with who's there, if someone's all of a sudden not showing up, just checking on them. And I know this church in particular is really good about that. I have learned this church, you all care for each other so much, and it's wonderful. But just taking notice, if they're not coming, you know, what's going on? Checking on them. Why are they all of a sudden socially isolating? Or are they socially isolating, or have they just been sick for the past few weeks? But even then, of course, you all want to know that. So just paying attention. If you're noticing someone's behavior is different, if you're noticing they're dressing different, if they're kind of showing up and, you know, maybe they're just not quite as put together as they used to be, just any of those changes. If you are someone that goes and visits people in the home, just sort of looking around. Is their home getting to a point where they can't take care of it? Are you noticing that they are having food in the, I mean, we don't usually go look in people's refrigerators, but if you happen to, if they've got food in there that is, you know, just gotten old and they're not cleaning it out, and, you know, just things like that. If they're not taking care of themselves, you know, thinking about what's going on or passing that on to your pastoral care, and then they may say, hey, Jill, could you or one of your coordinators, maybe can we set up maybe you going to visit and just sort of see what kind of feel you get about what might be happening with this individual, or are there some resources that you have that can come in and help them sort of get some things together. So
I would add to be very sensitive to the fact that most people that are dealing with dementia are trying to stay normal for as long mm-hmm. as they can. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they often hide things and are very sensitive. They understand things aren't quite right. And so it's to understand that they are not just not telling the truth. They are actually doing the best they can and often feel very defensive, knowing that the best they can doesn't always work. So would keep that in mind when you notice someone that is having some changed behaviors at church, just to be very encouraging, very complimentary, very glad to see them here, get right in front of them so they can really see they have start having trouble, their field of vision gets more like this, and they are not conversing that much, but it's because somebody's kind of walking beside them and they don't understand that that's not really a good field for them. Welcoming, and it's embarrassing. If they're with a spouse, I would make an extra effort to have conversation. I have people come, you know, say a lot in classes, well, we try to go to church, but no one talks to us anymore because it's awkward, you know. So understand that if the person that seemingly changed is questionable with dementia, if they can't answer you, it doesn't matter. They still respond to it. It's just so good to see you here. We enjoy seeing you. Don't ask open-ended questions. Just talk about how much you enjoy seeing them and being with them in that moment.
Yeah, calling them by name and being the present.
Calling them by name and just being present with them in that moment, it means a lot.
Yeah, well, and it kind of dovetails with something else that I know Amazing Places worked on a lot is, and I think this also comes into maybe something that we can do is how do we, I guess more globally or communally, how do we begin to reduce the stigma of dementia and folks with dementia? Talk about that for a moment.
The education is a big component of that. I know, you know, just educating leaders in the church and then these programs that educate the caregivers and the families, it will go a long ways towards reducing the stigma, because we grew up in a culture that approached dementia with a medical model. And that medical model was the lockdown wing of a nursing home and giving a medication. And that's what we've all seen. And it's a horrifying image. But that's not at all the way it is, or it has to be. And that's not how it is today. And education and understanding more and learning what to do. If you ever visit Amazing Place, these people are so joyful and they are so busy and productive there and do wonderful things. They're not minimized at all, and they have friends. And I've seen other groups, like there's the Alzheimer's choir group, mm-hmm. and you sometimes can't tell the difference. They come with their caregiver and they have choir practice at Chapelwood, and then they have some performances several times a year. So you can't tell the difference when they're practicing in choir between the caregiver and their loved one. They are very joyful and having a really good time. It's being able to provide the right environment for them, the right kinds of things to do. And when you see that, it really does reduce the stigma.
Jill?
And I echo that. I firmly believe that education is the key. Mm-hmm. I think that people are, as Sharon said, they're a little fearful of dementia, not really sure how to interact with someone with dementia. So I think education is the key. And one of the things Faith Care Connection hopes to do in the near future is really come up with sort of a toolkit or a manual, per se, for churches to how to become, what are some ways to become a dementia-friendly church. And so we are working on that as well, that we hopefully can provide to some of our churches. As we're learning about the churches and we're learning some things, we want to continue to educate the churches on what they can do to be more dementia friendly. And I think, you know, that will help in the stigma of dementia as well, especially in our church group, because that is where obviously we want people to feel comfortable and loved and a safe place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we want our churches to be that place.
Yeah, and that's really what we're going to talk about in the aging conference, is because I think churches are so important to address this overwhelming need. both of you, Sharon, Jill, thank you very much for being with us today. And well, I guess we have a couple minutes left for questions. Does anybody have a question? Anything come to mind that you wanted to ask them? Yes, Damon.
Right.
You do not let the dementia brain make the decisions. They're going to say, I don't want this, I don't want this, I don't. No, no, because they're not being stubborn. They're just holding on to what's normal. Something new, something different, change in their schedule, that's very hard for them. But don't let the dementia brain make the decisions.
So a lot of times, this is where the church can come in. I have found that with Faith Care Connection that people trust their pastors and their priests. And so if their pastor or priest says, I'm concerned and I just would like you to have a conversation with we have this relationship with this organization. I'd love for you just to have a conversation. And again, we really want it to be conversational, not clinical, so that it's non-threatening. 99% of the time, if their pastor or priest says, I would love for you to connect and talk with this person, they say yes. And what I have found is for some of those individuals that are in denial or don't really want to talk about it, they may say, or even their caregiver may say, I don't need anything right now. And I say, that's fine. And here's my card and here's my number. And you call me if you want, if anything changes. And hey, by the way, I'm going to give you a call in a few months, couple months, and just check on you and see how you're doing. And there have been a lot of times where we've made that phone call the next month or two, and either the person or the spouse says, well, you know what? We are having a little difficulty with this. And I'll say, here are some resources, here's some education, here are some things that might help you.
Yeah, and I found that to be a process. It's just a continual process. And especially sometimes it's hard because you feel like maybe you've made a little progress and then call back the next week or the next week after that and the person's, you know, either changed their minds or they've forgotten or they don't remember it quite the same way. So it's just a continual process that the family, I know, goes through on a daily basis. But what do you do when you feel like you've fallen back in the progress that you've made with somebody?
Well, remember the reasoning skills are not there with the person with dementia. So to continue to involve them in a decision-making process is not going to be helpful. And that's not going to improve 2 months later. What does improve is the caregivers in the family realizing that they do need help, and then they become more readily available and seeking help, and or education or help with someone like Jill and FCC. But to continue to involve the person with dementia in that type of decision-making process of going to a doctor, going to a specialist, getting this type of help is counterproductive.
Anyone else? All right. Looks like everybody's hungry, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you all.
Very much.
And
we have some information up here on the front table. We have some flyers and some cards and some information if you're interested in picking anything up. And from a Faith Care Connection standpoint, if you're thinking of anybody right now that you're concerned about, talk to Greg. Talk to me, and we'd love to be able to help.
And if you know of anyone that would benefit from the caregiver programs, the Savvy Calendar is out on the table. I have lots of pending classes coming up, some all through September. And we have a collaborative model, which Greg kind of helped establish, and it's he refers someone that needs help, and I can fit them in any church, any program, whatever's most convenient for them. So that's the way the collaborative model with the churches work. There are lots of different areas, times, months, times of day, and we are all working together to take care of our community